This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The U.S. Justice Department is set to release about 6,000 inmates nationwide at the end of the month. More than 200 are expected to come from prisons in North Carolina. It is one of the biggest releases of federal inmates, and it's a step toward larger efforts to reduce overcrowding in prisons and scale back punishments for low-level drug offenses. My guest is NPR Justice Correspondent Carrie Johnson. Carrie, welcome to the State of Things. Good to talk with you.
You as well. Thanks.
Tell us more about this. What's behind this decision? How long has this decision been in the works? And tell us more about what's behind it.
Frank, this is all based on a ruling or a vote by the U.S. Sentencing Commission, an independent agency that sets sentencing policies for federal crimes. Last July, they made a change to reduce overcrowding and gave prisons and judges a year to prepare for the release of inmates and judges to consider and process applications. What they decided to do was make some sentencing policies for drug crimes retroactive. And presumptively, this could apply to as many as 40,000 or more inmates already in prison.
Right. And tell us again, we're talking about drug cases, mostly low-level drug offenses. Give us a clearer picture of who would be released.
Yeah, about half the people in the federal system, Frank, are in for drug-related crimes. They are not necessarily violent prisoners or people who have been kingpins in large violent drug gangs. A huge portion of the 6,000-odd people who are going to be released as of November 1st or November 2nd have already been released to halfway houses and community centers all over the country, including in North Carolina.
All right. And we've got a prison system that we know. I mean, endless reports on a prison industrial complex, mass incarceration. We've got over 7 million people in jail. That's a huge number, highest incarceration rate in the world. And also problems with disparity in terms of who is in prison racially and ethnically. Talk about who's going to be released and whether or not that reflects overall in terms of ethnic background and racial background, the prison population in general.
Frank, what we know so far is this. The Sentencing Commission issued a report earlier this month in October that indicated of the 6,000 or so who are coming out very shortly, about a third are undocumented immigrants who are likely to be deported immediately following their release, or are people who, because of their immigration status and the nature of the crime for which they've been convicted, are eligible for deportation. And most of the people being released are Black or Hispanic men, which reflects the prison population generally.
When I talk about this group of immigrants who might be deported, it's interesting. What are the rules around that? If you're undocumented and arrested for a crime, what takes precedence? According to the rules, should you be deported first, or do we routinely incarcerate people who otherwise would have been deported?
Historically, the Justice Department and the federal courts do house, prosecute and house some undocumented people who have been convicted of crimes, or maybe people who were here on some visitor status and have committed a crime. But after their sentence has been served in the U.S., they are supposed to be deported swiftly. And in fact, Frank, some Republican members of Congress, including the leader of the House Judiciary Committee here in Washington, Bob Goodlatte from Virginia, have already been asking questions about how swiftly some of these 1,500 to 2,000 people who are not of legal status in prison about to be released, how many of those people are going to be deported and how quickly. He wants those people out of the country as soon as possible.
Will any of these inmates who are part of this release program find any help in transitioning out of prison?
That's a critical question here because we know recidivism rates for federal and state and local inmates are very high, too high, according to basically everybody who looks at this problem. And a key is getting people drug and alcohol treatment, getting people employment, getting people a safe place to live. In most cases, Frank, this is dependent on local actors in the system. So probation officers, court officials, supervisors, and halfway houses in various communities around the country, including Texas, Virginia, and North Carolina, where a lot of inmates are coming out in November.
You talked about giving the prosecutors and judges about a year to get ready for this, but what is the process? Can inmates apply for this? Do prosecutors have to go back over their records and see who might be eligible? How did it work?
Very important question. So the Sentencing Commission made these guidelines retroactive, but each inmate had to apply to a federal judge, in most cases the judge who sentenced him or her back in the day. And the judge did an analysis on a case-by-case basis of whether someone seeking early release in fact posed a danger to the community. Frank, what we know is about 3 out of 4 people who applied did win early release, shaving an average of about 2 years off of their sentence. But in some cases, judges determined that these inmates were either high-level drug kingpins or too dangerous to release, posed a risk to public safety. In fact, in a case I've been following here in Washington, D.C., a local judge found that 2 members of one of the most violent and devastating drug gangs of the 1980s here in D.C. did not deserve early release.
All right. And we talked about this being 6,000. We're talking, in this case, only about people who are housed in federal prisons. Is that right?
That's right. We know now about 205,000 people are housed in federal prisons, but a huge number more, a million or more, cycle in and out of state and local facilities all over the country. So when you talk generally about dialing back tough-on-crime policies of the 70s, 80s, and 90s and reducing incarceration, a large portion of that problem or that issue has to be accomplished at the state and local level.
And do you know much about what's happening here in North Carolina? We know that over 200 of the 6,000 will come from North Carolina prisons, federal prisons in North Carolina. How does this state rank in terms of the numbers released compared to other states?
It's up there, Frank. Texas, according to the Sentencing Commission, will receive the largest number of early released inmates, parts of Virginia, and then following North Carolina and a few other states. Although I was at a conference recently, I heard the number 2 at the Justice Department, the Deputy Attorney General, say that no one city would expect to receive more than 60 of these inmates at a time.
We're talking about a decision to release 6,000 inmates currently incarcerated in federal prisons, and we're talking about it today on The State of Things. Carrie Johnson is my guest. She's NPR Justice Correspondent. So we're talking about 6,000 people now. Is this just the first wave, or can we expect more?
Indeed, we're going to be expecting a lot more, Frank. The Sentencing Commission says about 17,000 people altogether so far have applied and won their bid for early release. Guidelines suggest that as many as 40,000 people could cycle out of the system, an average of about 9,000 a year for the next few years. So this is the first in a phase, the first phase, rather, of a larger, wider process going on all over the country.
All right. And as you said, this is an administrative process taking place through the Justice Department on the advice of a commission that took a look at the problem. But obviously, this has political implications. Do we know how this is being received on partisan lines?
It is a little sensitive politically, Frank, in part because although we're at near record lows in terms of crime rates, near 50-year lows, in fact, nationally, some cities, especially major urban centers, have been experiencing an uptick in violent crime and some homicides over the last several months. So the FBI, state and local police are looking carefully at this population of inmates about to be released, going to be monitoring them to make sure they are not posing a violent crime threat. That said, there have been bipartisan efforts here on Capitol Hill in Washington to rethink how we punish people, especially low-level nonviolent drug offenders. And there is some legislation moving forward in both the House and the Senate in that regard.
And of course, a lot of there's a connection, or often a connection, drawn between an increase in violent crime and drug criminal activity. And so one argument is, if you decriminalize drug abuse and actually treat it rather than and criminalize it, a lot of the violence could go down. Do you see more sentiment for that across party lines, particularly in light of this report that came out over a year ago?
Well, in fact, just yesterday in Washington, Frank, I was at a news conference in which major city police chiefs, the leaders of the police departments in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, the former leader in New Orleans, all called for a new approach to punishing people who maybe addicted to drugs or alcohol. They want to see more sobriety centers. They want to see more mental health treatment. They don't want to be spending their scarce law enforcement resources arresting people who are addicts or sick in some way. Instead, they want to focus and target their efforts on the most dangerous violent offenders perpetrating gun crimes and other crimes across their communities.
And of course, what we're seeing now in terms of overcrowding is really the legacy of the many three strikes laws, including at the federal level, mandatory life sentences. Political appetite for change in those rules?
The Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee Republican leaders and Democratic leaders of both of those panels have proposed some modest legislation that would dial back some of those three strikes penalties for people who were just convicted of relatively minor drug offenses, not subjecting them to life sentences, instead subjecting them to a maximum of 25 years in prison, which is still an awfully long time. We know, Frank, now, based on a lot of research and scholarship, that many inmates actually age out of crime. So if you keep them incarcerated for lengthy periods of time, by the time they get out, they may have aged out of that crime problem and the factors that were contributing to their offense levels in their earlier years.
All right, Carrie Johnson, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Carrie Johnson is NPR's justice correspondent. She covered the Justice Department's release of 6,000 federal inmates across the country. Just ahead, we'll preview a play that combines a post-apocalyptic world with the humor of the nation's most famous dysfunctional cartoon family. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.